I'm not naturally wired to put people first. I'm naturally wired to get things done first. I'm a task person, not a people person. I have not always been good at scheduling. And so I don't schedule a lot of margin in my schedule, which makes me feel very stressed, makes me feel very chaotic. As I've learned to put space in my schedule for what I call divine interruptions, because when somebody walks in my office and needs something, I feel like God has hit them in my doorway, because that's what I pray is, let me remember to put people first. Let me remember to love people well.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Carrie Ann Jasper Yearty, like dirty, which is how I remember it now. So that may come back to haunt her. And if so, then we'll edit it out. But she is one of the owners of Jasper Ventures, Inc., in case you're curious about how they're incorporated. She's passionate about people, work, and faith. And as a fellow Enneagram 8, she loves to challenge and encourage others to reach their God-given potential and have eternal impact in their daily lives. Welcome to the show, Carrie Ann.
Thank you, Kenny. I am so glad that you asked me to be here, and I'm grateful that we have finally been able to connect.
Yes, we will overcome. We'll not let the devil of technology beat us.
Satan is in it for sure.
Yeah, I think this is definitely, there's some scriptures about overcoming the evils of technology.
Yes.
It's somewhere in there. I'll find it. It's probably Old Testament. Well, Carrie, I'm excited to have this conversation. I know we talked about it for a while, but tell me today, what is on your mind?
Gosh, Kenny, does anybody ever just have one thing on their mind? That's what I really want to know, because
rarely.
Okay.
Rarely.
Yeah.
At least the people I invite.
Okay. I could go a ton of different directions with this, but I feel very clearly that we are supposed to talk about loving others today.
I'm down. And that's a big talk. I feel like that could be a mini series or a you know, there's always mini series, but never like mega series. I have many things on my mind.
Okay.
So when you say we're supposed to talk about that, what about loving others is really resonating for you right now?
So it's interesting. One of the things that we do here at Jasper is we're very much about culture. My former position is VP of People and Culture. I feel like we built a culture that's really unique. People love to come work here. It's something we're very proud of. And even this morning, we have something every month that we call Refuel and Refocus. Mm-hmm. And it's just an opportunity. It's not mandatory. Our employees we come together, we share a meal, we have a speaker. We usually play a game. Today it was trivia, really hard trivia. I did not win. and so we had this amazing speaker this morning, and you might know her, Crystal Smoker from St. Paul Children's.
I'm better with faces than names, but it's not okay. Ringing a bell.
Fabulous. Anyway, the whole year we have been talking about Romans 12. Mm-hmm. So this was kind of the final verses of Romans 12, which, by the way, is not about love, but she went back a few verses and she talked about verses 9 through 10. It really talks about be genuine in your love, hate what's evil, hold fast to what's good. And the whole idea of loving one another with brotherly love and then outdoing, honoring everyone.
Yeah.
And at the same time, as I was praying this morning in my quiet time, the Lord took me right to John 15. Okay. And very specifically to John 15, 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I've loved you. Greater love has no man than this, than someone lay down his life for his friends. John 15, 9, abide in my love. So this word keeps coming up, and it was not what I was thinking I was going to talk about today. So who knows where this is going to go?
I love that. And it's been fun. I got to do, I already forgot my verses, but I did the refuel in June.
Yes, you did.
And I talked about the storms of life. And funny enough, it was the day that we had a torrential downpour and lightning and all sorts of things. So I felt like I had a great sermon illustration direct from the heavens. So that was cool. It's not happened to me before. But yeah, I think loving one another, and then I think it's is one that is popular in just mass culture. You know, you hear love is love and we should all love one another. But what does love even mean? Right. And it means different things. And we could get into, like, there's, you know, different Greek words for love that were used throughout the Bible. But as you've been coming across it, meditating on it, even just in the last 24 hours or so, what aspect of loving one another, or maybe even laying down your life as a form of love, how does that show up today? Because that can seem either really ethereal. Oh, yeah, sure. I love them. Yeah. You know, we're in the South. We can say, love you, praying for you. And it means like, I would hit you with my car if I could get away with it. And then laying down your life just seems like, okay, like, what am I, a police officer? So could you go into a bit of like what you feel like the Lord's sharing with you and maybe how that's shown up at Jasper in terms of how y'all love your employees? Because I think for most, that's a strange notion to love on each other in the workplace.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I was actually thinking, okay, is this really what I'm going to talk about today? I was thinking about when we kind of first introduced this whole idea of Beyond Business at Jasper. And so we have here in White House, we have our corporate offices. We have an office in Tulsa where we have our, I would call it like our white collar. You've got your engineers, you've got your project managers, your accounting, your HR people. And then a few miles down the road, we have our troop fabrication facility. So think primarily blue collar. You've got your pipe, you know, your pipe welders. You've got your warehouse, you've got forklift drivers, crane operators. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we started talking about what we wanted to create with Beyond Business, we talked about really the basis of that was about loving God and loving others. And so how do we show love to others? And there's a ton of different ways that you can do it, I think, in the workplace. And what I remember our plant manager at the time saying is, that feels like really soft. And do I have to hug everybody? And I said, no, that might be offensive to some people if you start hugging everybody to show them you love them. But I mean, I think first and foremost, one of the things that I was thinking of this morning is just being present. I think presence is one of the ways that we really show love. It's just being present with people. Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing, I think. And I think what we've tried to do here at Jasper is we've tried to provide opportunities for managers really to be present with their employees in a way that gets to know them and shows them love. And we've also really worked hard to give our leadership an opportunity to really be present with people, even like Refuel and Refocus this morning. I think all three owners were there this morning, which doesn't always happen because sometimes one of us is out of the office. But it's a great opportunity for us as we're sharing a meal together and everybody's just coming in just to be present and just to see how everybody's doing. We have one employee, his wife starts chemotherapy tomorrow. She has cancer. She has stage 3C cancer. And the fact that I know that, I love the fact that I know that because we pray for our employees. I love the fact that I can go to him and by name ask him how his wife is doing and that I now know specifically how I can pray for him. And so I think just knowing our people, everybody wants to be known, right? Everybody wants to be known. We were created for love. And so I think if we are abiding in Jesus, who is love, it makes it a lot easier for us to then love others. It's just that kind of outward reflection of what Jesus and what the Lord is doing in us.
Yeah. It sounds like, For you and maybe even for, you know, Jasper and the culture, love isn't something that we will ourselves to do. It's really just love that's been given to us and we pour it back out, right? Like we love because he first loved us, right? Like scripture.
Yes. Absolutely not something we can just make up, right?
You manufacture a lot of things at Jasper, but love isn't one of them.
Right.
I feel like that would be a great t-shirt. I just put my name. you know what? Sponsored by this quote, sponsored by Kenny Lang.
I like
it. What, real quick, to just give some more context to the listener, can you talk just a little bit about what Jasper does, what it is, so people can start to set the stage in their mind? Because I think that there are some unique things that you're doing, but I find them more unique because of the industry and type of work you're in.
Yeah, so Jasper was founded back in 1992 by our dad. It is a supplier to the midstream oil and gas industry. We actually build gas processing plants. They're called cryogenic gas processing plants. My dad was a chemical engineer, a graduate from the University of Kentucky. And so he was looking at what was happening where he was working. And he just felt like he, number one, could do it better and could treat people better and really honor the Lord. And so he created Jasper in order to do that. It was originally EPC, never intended to be a family business. I joined the company in 2011 after his business partner retired. My brother then joined the company in 2016, then my brother-in-law in 2017. And we've just really tried to continue the legacy that my dad started. He passed away in 2023. And so we just want to be able to honor the fact that he started this company just really, it was faith. It was only faith. It was only faith. He just didn't have anything else, but he was being obedient with where the Lord felt like he was leading him. And so to be able to do this in an oil and gas industry where we do everything from the original design analysis from the engineering perspective, all the way to the point where we're building the modules, we're putting them together, we're shipping them out to the field, and sometimes even constructing and installing those in the field.
Oh. And so when you think about the culture of oil and gas, you usually don't think, you know, your comment from your plant manager about, well, that seems kind of soft. Like that's sort of the first thing I think would bubble up for anybody when you start thinking about, like, dude, like these guys are out sweating their face off. I mean, we're in Texas. Yeah. It's not cool.
No.
It's cool to live here, but it does not feel cool in the weather. So was this something like when you came on in 2011, was your dad already doing some of these like formal, like, hey, we're going to have a reset and a refuel and we're going to do some of these different things? Or was that something more that you formalized as you came in and he started looking around? Like you mentioned, you know, we were talking before we recorded, is that your former position was of VP of People and Culture. Was that a large part of your work was to institutionalize the things your dad was already naturally doing, or did he already have a sense of like, we've got to build this into the fabric?
Yeah. So, I would say the way dad did it was as a chemical engineer would do it, very quietly, very humbly.
Yeah.
Loving people.
Yeah.
Through actions. Not so many words, because engineers don't have a lot of those. I would also say that he was just very generous. He was very generous with his employees, and he was very generous in this community. And so I think what I began to see, and I learned a lot from other companies and reading and just praying and just really just abiding in what the Lord had for me, but seeing what other companies were doing, I realized there was so much more we could do. And so, you know, we didn't have values. We didn't have beyond business. I mean, we had values. We just didn't have written core values, you know, like we had values. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have any of these things. And so it's like, how do we take the generosity that my dad has in the community? And how do we turn some of that back into Jasper and figure out how to be even more generous with our people? And what we came up with, my brother and I, as we began to just talk about this and dream about this and pray about this, was, you know, we have an opportunity right here in front of us with sometimes hundreds of employees, sometimes less. I think we have around 120 employees right now. We have an opportunity right here to share the love and the good news of Jesus, you know, looking at our workplace as our mission field. I was actually speaking at a chapel Monday at East Texas Baptist University. And one of the things that I was thinking about is not everybody has to go to work. I mean, not everybody has to go to church, but somebody in the household has to get a paycheck, right? You've got bills to pay. And so we have kind of a captive audience here. And so we may not all be professional ministers, right? We're not all in ministry. We're not all in missions, but we are all ministers of the gospel. And so what we hate to say, it's like the WWJD. What would Jesus do? You know, Jesus was in my workplace. He was a worker. He was a carpenter. What would he do in an oil and gas company? How would he treat people, right? How would he behave?
Right. Which, you know, it sounds like you said, the bracelets and stuff. You know, some people can make light of that. But I think if you really sit with that question, it comes up with some challenging answers.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, oil and gas can be the Wild West. For, you know, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, what, obviously your dad starting from that place, I think, sets a huge tone. And whether it was him or even as y'all started to formalize things, and I do want you to talk a little bit about, you know, what Beyond Business is and what it's become now, which is really cool. Started in-house and has now been spun out into its own nonprofit. Can you talk a little bit about just how that started, you know, which you've mentioned, but just how it grew and how you make the decision to let it stand on its own, and what's the sort of work it's doing now, and what's its relationship to Jasper at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Beyond Business was really an idea that is completely from the Lord. Even the name is completely from the Lord, because we weren't even sure what to call it, but we didn't want it, it's going to sound terrible, we didn't want it to sound Christian-y. We wanted it to be something that sounded inclusive, that people could understand, that, you know, what we're doing here in this business is beyond any of us, right? It's going to, the way that we treat people, the way that we love people is going to outlive the business or outlive any of us in the business or outlive the things that we build, right? Or the things that we do or the products and services that we provide. And so as we were looking at how can we be more generous internally, how can we love our employees well, we've done a lot of different things. Obviously, the first thing we started was we're going to have weekly prayer, and whoever wants to come can come. And we do that all over our sites. So you know, that was one of the first things we implemented. Refill and Refocus was also one of the very first things we implemented. And so you're familiar with that process. I've talked a little bit about it, but we started it here in White House because it was easier to start here. There was less pushback, but we didn't start that in Troop for about, I think it was 2 years before we could convince those guys that number one, people would come. Number two, they wouldn't lose productivity.
Yeah.
And that people would actually enjoy it, right? That we had something that we felt like was going to make a difference in people's lives. And we said, just let us try it. And if it doesn't work, if you lose productivity, if you get behind in your schedule, we'll stop. Mm-hmm. And we've never stopped. Once we've started, we've never stopped. Yeah. So, you know, we've done things. We've done Bible studies here. We've done the Alpha course here. We've done Alpha Marriage, where we're trying to pour into marriages. We really try to celebrate people well. We have values awards. We call them Jaspies. And so these are all little things that we try to do to make Jasper unique and to make people feel that the work that they do and where they do it, they are making a difference. They are valuable and they are worthy, and they are known and they are loved here. And that, once again, it doesn't matter who you are or what your job is or how tough you are. We all want to be known and loved. Even those guys out there that can, you know, well, then
they might have a tough exterior. I mean, it's the centrality of humans too. They want to be seen, they want to be heard, and they want to know that they matter, or what they do or what they're doing matters. And it sounds like y'all have really tried to invest in that, but it can seem so counterintuitive or like a time waste. This isn't welding more things. This is eating Andy's ice cream, which is what y'all had when I was there. My children, thank you, because Maureen sent me home with an extra little thing of ice cream, and so nice. My children are grateful. But they didn't save any for me, which I'm still bitter about. But I might need some prayer after this.
That's right.
But it is funny how we can stop doing as much. And you got into talking about presence. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to define that more, because I think that I think it's harder than ever to be present as just a human. But then to really, like, you can be physically present. And I tell people this all the time, because I'm an Enneagram 8, so I'm fixed on the future and visionary, and I might have ADHD and a few other things. I tell people, I know you see me physically, but the rest of me is like 2 months, 2 years down the road. I'm not actually here. And I know sometimes that's helpful, but then there's other times where it's really robbing me and others I care about by not being fully present. So can you talk a little bit about what that has come to mean for you or just for the company?
Yeah, I think for me personally, and I know we have other managers that do this, and we're not, once again, we're not perfect. We are still learning. We're still learning. So, you know, for me, one of those things is just spending time with people one-on-one, not talking about work, not getting updates on projects, not looking at numbers, but just simply, how are you going? How is your spouse? How are your kids? What's going on? How can I pray for you? You can intimately get to know somebody just by spending an hour with them once a week or once every couple of weeks, and really investing in them. You know, what are their dreams and what do they hope to do? So it's a time where I don't have my phone. I don't have my computer up. I'm sitting across, you can't see it, but I'm sitting across the room in two chairs. And yeah. So I'm not where anything's dinging or, you know, trying to vie for my attention. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing. I also feel like one of the things that I've learned, because you mentioned I'm also at Enneagram 8 on Culture Index. I'm a traditionalist. If you have any listeners that know what Culture Index is, and I like to get things done. I'm not naturally wired to put people first. I'm naturally wired to get things done first. I'm a task person, not a people person. And so, yes. So what I have learned about myself is I have not always been good at scheduling. And so I don't schedule a lot of margin in my schedule, which makes me feel very stressed, makes me feel very chaotic. Mm-hmm. And as I've learned to put space in my schedule for what I call divine interruptions, because when somebody walks in my office and needs something and I'm in the middle of something, I feel like God has hit them in my doorway. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I pray is, like, let me remember to put people first. Let me remember to love people well. And so I will physically step from around my desk, once again, where I can't see anything that's going on over here, and I'll go over there where they are, and I will sit on the edge of my desk or stand there. And of course, if they really need to talk for a while, they'll come in and sit. But we can have a conversation, and I can be fully present without distraction, looking at them, listening to them. If it's, can I pray with you? You know, right now, if they're not comfortable with that, which nobody ever says no, but you know, I can always say, you know, I will pray for you, because maybe they're busy and they have somewhere to get to. So I think that allowing the spirit just to move and allowing time to do that in your schedule and not having it so rigid, right? I can be very rigid. I'm very structured, and I realize that is not a good quality. Mm-hmm. It can be good. It can be a good quality in some ways. I get stuff done. But when it comes to people, it can be very off-putting.
Yeah.
If they're talking to me and I'm still sitting here on my keyboard, or I'm looking at my screen while they're talking to me, because that's telling them, I don't really care about what you have to say, or I don't have time for you. And the Lord just showed me that that is, you don't multitask. The Lord has showed me you don't multitask when somebody's with you. Once again, not perfect, but I have just found that even if I spend time with them that I didn't have, I get that time back.
Yeah.
And I still accomplish what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me as well, is stop multitasking or like, oh my gosh, like I have no margin. I've been recently trying to work on that, is schedule every minute and just right up until time for everything.
It's so hard. It's so hard not to, right? You feel like you've got so much to do and there's so many people vying for your attention, and there's really good books and time management tools out there, but it really comes down to really, really praying over your schedule and really allowing the Lord to speak into your schedule and to show you when something is not yours. I mean, that's, I think, something that I've had to learn that's really been humbling is I don't have to do everything.
What?
You don't. I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. Which, you know, it's interesting when I think about love. This is something that's also hit me recently. I've been reading a book. I think this was the Life Without Lack book by Dallas Willard. And what he says is that we are not called to love everybody. And I was like, what does he mean by that? And he says, everybody is not a person. We are each called to love our neighbor. And he talked about how neighbor is an old English word, and I'm not going to remember it exactly, but it's kind of like the bore, and it's not like a boring person, the bore who is nigh, right? So what that means is nearby. So I can't love everybody. Only God can do that, right? Because I'm not omnipresent. I'm just not big enough to do that, but I can love somebody. I can love those nearby. I can love my coworkers. I can love my family. I can love my friends. I can love my actual neighbors that are in the houses next to me. And so I think it's just that idea of we are limited human beings. We are finite. Yeah. And how do we use the time that we have in our small corner of the world, in our small corner of space, to impact the kingdom?
Yeah, that's really good. It's something Andy, going along with that, something Andy Stanley talked about has stuck with me. He was talking about, as if you're unfamiliar with Andy Stanley.
Oh, I love Andy Stanley.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So for any of the listeners, you can go check out North Point Ministries. They're in the Atlanta area. He does a lot of great stuff. He's brilliant speaker and writer. He just has a real gift for simplifying the complex.
Absolutely.
But one of the things he talked about in that interview once was about when the church was growing, and early on as the founding and lead pastor, he would officiate all the weddings and do all the funerals. He goes, and then it became where so many people were getting married and they wanted me to do it. He goes, I physically could not attend all of these. And then I've become very selective. And he goes, and that was really hard for me because I felt like I was letting a lot of people down, or I was being very unloving towards them. And he goes, I really had to pray through that. And whether it was through God, the Holy Spirit, or his wife, which you could also argue is a form of the Holy Spirit, he said, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone.
Mm, wow.
And that's really helpful, especially for, you know, this is a podcast that, you know, for those high capacity, high powered leaders such as yourself, Carrie, and we do believe, mistakenly, we believe we can do everything, we can get to everybody, we can do, you know, and then when we apply that sort of thinking to, you know, our faith and our values, we're like, well, I can love everyone. I'm going to reach everyone for Christ. Like, you know, like simmer down, Paul.
Yeah.
But it means, can I love the person in front of me as though they were the only person? And, you know, I can't get to everybody, but what if I love this one person like I wish I could love everyone? And love can mean a hug. It can mean listening. I've found more and more it usually means just shut up and be there.
Yeah.
Be with you, be with them in solidarity so that they know they're not alone. I think that's a great example Christ gave us. One of the things I come back to, though, when I get onto the issue of love in a conversation, especially with those of the Christian faith, whether I'm preaching or just having a conversation, is Christ said that we need to love our neighbor as ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to love our neighbors if we don't first love ourselves. So like, if I hate myself, how am I supposed to love my neighbor? And I think a lot of people are great at feigning or just like manufacturing some love towards their towards those around them, but it's always short-lived. It leads to burnout. Mm-hmm. It seems insincere, or it's conditional, or something. There's cracks in the foundation. I would be curious, and if I'm poking at something that isn't there, tell me. But as someone who is a fellow Enneagram 8, and if you're unfamiliar with the Enneagram, just ask me about it and I'll go off on a tangent. I'm an accredited Enneagram practitioner. I use it with all of my clients and their teams. It has been transformative in my life. And there is an episode, and I don't remember which number, but it is an intro to the Enneagram. We'll link that up in the show notes. It was a presentation that I made to some Christian executives in Dallas that'll give you the baseline. But eights are the challenger, the active controller. We have the most energy. We're usually the most direct. We're in the anger triad. We externalize our anger. We're very comfortable with feelings of frustration. We've been accused of singeing people's eyebrows, and we thought we were just having a simple conversation. But for Enneagram 8s, like for men, especially here in the West and in the U.S., all of those traits are attributed as somehow positive. And I'm not saying they aren't, but stereotypically positive, and we're being assertive and we're doing this, but Enneagram 8 women don't get that same benefit. They're usually called some really not nice words. Mm-hmm. Because if you're assertive and I'm assertive, they're going to call you something, but they may give me admiration for really taking charge and leading. And then let's layer on, you're an Enneagram 8 woman in the South, which has its own culture, and then in the Christian faith. Because there's a huge push that women should be more like Enneagram 2s, which is called the helper. And they're usually very gentle caregiver types. And not that you haven't described anything that isn't caregiving. And I talked to another Enneagram 8 woman CEO who's in the oil and gas industry here in Tyler. And I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And we had a great conversation. We talk about what is that experience? Because you've lived in a culture, you've come up in a culture, both professionally and just geographically, and then faith spiritually, that would emphasize that the strength of personality, the directness, is not a great quality, which I could imagine for you is could make it hard to love yourself. And by virtue, make it hard to really love others. You get really in touch with the anger. Everybody's mad at me because I wasn't being quiet when they said I should have been quiet. And I'm like, I'm not going to be quiet. I'm not supposed to be quiet. I have stuff to say. Yeah. And you're an obstacle to progress. And I'm going to let Jesus deal with you and set you on fire and send you straight to hell. But can you talk a little bit about that experience and your journey in finding, how do I love and fully express who God made me to be, even though there's outside forces that directly or indirectly say, no, the way you're being isn't right?
Ooh, that's a big question.
Sorry, that's a lot. Oh, that's so. Maybe that's a part two.
It's really interesting. When I was introduced to the Enneagram, I don't even remember how I was introduced to it, but I was a little skeptical, but I did the test. And it was a group of women, a group of moms that we were all studying it together. We all had daughters, I think, in middle school at the time. And I remember taking the test and we all came together. And I remember thinking, I was really disappointed I was an 8. That might ring true for somebody, but I really wanted to be a 2. I really wanted to be a 2 because I was like, I want to be that helpful person. I want to be the person that is thoughtful. I want to be the person that is very others focused. And as I got into the Enneagram, I think what I realized is, to me, it became much more freeing than I thought it could be, because I learned more about unhealthy 8s and healthy 8s, right? Mm-hmm. I also learned that, which I didn't learn this, I know this, that there's no bad Enneagram number. Just like there's no bad culture index pattern, right?
Right.
We are who God made us to be. Right. He fashioned us. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And so what the Enneagram actually did for me is to help me recognize when I'm maybe not being healthy. Mm-hmm. And it also allowed me to give myself some compassion. I feel like I'm not a super compassionate person. I don't know that eights necessarily are. That might be part of it. And so it's also, if it's hard for me to be compassionate to others, it's hard for me to be compassionate with myself. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to realize that my number is not bad, right? My number is not bad. And I can still behave in a way that is driven by my faith. Do I still offend people at times? Absolutely. Have I singed eyebrows? 100%. I'm much better if I practice that presence of the Lord with me. And before I open my mouth, I just ask the Lord to help me with my words. That has really helped me, because the last time I really singed some eyebrows, it was very eye-opening for me. And I've really strive to not go into that unhealth. Now, I still don't avoid conflict. I don't avoid confrontation. I still am direct, but I also realize that I can adjust for certain people that I know. If I get to know my people, right, this goes back to love. If I get to know my people and I get to know how they need to be communicated with, then I may not be as direct with somebody that isn't going to take that well. But if I have somebody else that appreciates my direct communication, then I will be more direct with them. And so once again, it comes back to like communicating with somebody or motivating somebody or whatever in a way that is going to be meaningful to them.
Yeah, it's taking that into account. You're not sacrificing who you are, but you're saying, if the goal is to communicate effectively and lovingly, then I need to look a little like this. And that is one thing you described, something I really love about the Enneagram, is there is no bad number, but there's healthy and unhealthy expressions of those numbers. There's mature and immature expressions mm-hmm. of those numbers. Like, we're very immature when we're kids, and you can look back and go, that has the right seed. Like, I'm looking at that, like, I've got 5 kids at home, 4 are in middle school to high school, so pray for me. But I can look at them, and there's stuff that they do that bugs the bejesus out of me, or I wish they wouldn't do, or something. But if I pause long enough, I can see, I know that the kernel of that thing is good and that it just needs to mature. Mm-hmm. And then I get to be an active participant. You know, I feel like God chose me to be their dad. And so they also feel like they need prayer, because mm-hmm. they ended up with me as a dad. I'm a little intense at times.
I understand. My children would probably say the same thing about me.
Yeah, it's like, we really like dad when he's sleeping. He seems so much more calm and reasonable then. So I appreciate you sharing that. That freedom is huge to really operate, because you do, you know, each of the numbers and each of the personalities and whatever you want to go, DISC or culture index or predictive index and all the other 37,000 other assessments, they all are a reflection of some aspect of God. Mm-hmm. And your team, just like you and Brent, your brother, but like y'all are very different people.
Oh, yes.
But you grew up in the same household, mm-hmm. right? And so your response is like, you weren't like clones or anything like that, but now you both are fully expressing who God designed you to be. And Jasper and other leaders and the people you're around benefit from that. And as you live it, then other people can as well, because, you know, and I think this is what you've been describing, is how that leadership, those principles have trickled down because y'all first sought to model them at the highest level, at the ownership and, mm-hmm. and executive level.
Right. And I think, you know, going back to, I think there was kind of an original question in all of this about Beyond Business. And we did spin off a nonprofit last year, which was amazing and a ton of work and much more than we ever could have anticipated. Melissa and I are still like, oh my gosh, what did we do? But that was because the community response for Beyond Business, people want to understand how to do this. They want to understand how to integrate their faith and work. They want to understand the depths of, it's not behavior. It's not about behavior. It's about our heart, right? It's about how we love others. So it's not about behavior modification. That's not what I can have integrity or I can be kind. I mean, those are great things, but how am I doing that? I can't do those things in my own strength. And so you know, as the community was asking questions and we started doing these summits and we started doing Connect and going into businesses, we realized we can't do all this and do this within Jasper. And so it's amazing now to have Melissa out handling Beyond Business in the community, but this is still a very integral and meaningful part of Jasper. When we committed to Beyond Business as a family, my brother and I specifically, it is a huge commitment. It is a huge time commitment. It is a huge financial commitment. It is a resource commitment. You know, we have a team dedicated to loving and caring for our people. That is their job. So, wow. You know, that takes resources. And it sounds crazy. And we maintained that during COVID. We've maintained that during our hardest layoffs, during our toughest times. We have maintained that because we think it is so important to love our people well, especially during hard times, especially during something like COVID, or especially when their friends and their coworkers are getting laid off and they're left behind and they have that, you know, kind of survivor's guilt or, you know, everybody else got laid off and I'm here. And so those are the times I actually need more love. And so, you know, some people have said, oh, you're not doing Beyond Business anymore. I'm, oh, no. Jasper still has a dedicated Beyond Business department. We just also have so much to share and we are learning so much still in Beyond Business and how to help other companies integrate their faith and work. I feel like even where we started, we're in a completely different place than we were even 8 years ago with what we thought this was going to look like and what it actually looks like.
Right. Well, I know even just talking with Melissa, and by the way, if anybody's interested, Melissa has a great episode on this podcast from last year. I think it came out January. So if you're listening to this far into the future, January 2025, her episode came out. It was fantastic. There's some funny stories behind her episode that I'm happy to share. I'm sure she would laugh at herself too. But that even just talking to her about, you know, what are the ideas that are being batted around and, well, we're going to try this, but now we've got to consider like a new location because y'all just packed it out over the summer at Connect. I was like, is this standing room only? Like, I stupidly put it on my calendar, but never bought a ticket. And I was like, hey, I'm sorry. I don't mean to seem like an airhead.
It's a good thing you've got connections, Kenny.
It is. It is very good that I have connections. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
That's right.
And then I was the very first person to, let's go on record, to buy a ticket for the 2026 summit.
I can verify that. Yes.
Yeah. We got the receipts. If you would talk just a little bit about, because this will be coming out right before the summit, and I'm sure you'll have ones in the future. Talk a little bit about what the summit is and what it does and how this could help other leaders, if this is resonating with them, how they could participate.
Yeah. So summit, gosh, it's another thing that's evolved. So as we were doing Beyond Business within Jasper and people were asking us questions like, how are you doing this? What are you doing? What if somebody sues you? You know, is that legal? I mean, all of these questions were coming up. And so then people started saying, you know, because everybody always has good ideas for you. Everybody started saying, not everybody, that's a little, but people we were talking to was like, you need to have some type of event and bring everybody together and have speakers so we can all learn together. So we're like, that's a great idea. So the summit was birthed. And I think, so in January of 2026, we will be having our seventh summit. I think the only year we missed was COVID. We did some online stuff that wasn't great, but we tried. And so what we tried to do are there's a lot of things that go into this, but we are trying to bring people into the space that are really experts in this field. They have lived this. They have been business people. They have been pastors, or they are pastors and business people. And they have found some of the keys, you know, to unlocking how to live out their faith and integrate that with their work, right? To not have those two things be separate, to not see this as secular work, right? If we're doing our work to the glory of God, it is sacred work. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's mending a broken bone or if it's picking up the trash or welding a pipe, right? If we're doing it to God's glory, then it's sacred. And so I think that with the summit in 2026, I think we're going to start to see I think we're going to be taking it up a notch to the next level. We've had amazing speakers. We have three or four voices in the space. We want people to reimagine. That's kind of the theme this year, to reimagine what their work could look like if they invited the Lord into their work every day, if they went into their work in the presence of God, asking God how to move forward in each thing that they do, what could that look like? And if you invite all these people in the community in, how does that change businesses? Mm-hmm. How does that change families? Because quick side note, when you live out beyond business in your business and you love your employees, it shows them how to love their spouses and their families better. We have had men's lives changed because of the work that they've done here. It is a meaningful way to bring in employees, leaders, people within your company that are people of faith, and developing them and allowing them to connect with other people that are also on this journey. And it doesn't matter where you are in the journey. It doesn't matter if you're starting or if you are years into it like we are. We all have something to learn in this space. We can all get better at it. And that was my point, was when you change the companies and it changes the families, then you impact communities, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe you impact everybody, right?
I
mean,
right.
Maybe eventually there's the ripple effects. But for right now, and we're focused in East Texas, but what does the community look like if businesses are being run with their, you know, with people of faith living out their faith? And you and people, I know people listening to this will say, you can't do that in my business. I promise you, we have stories of people that are in some of the most liberal nationwide companies that have found ways to fully integrate their faith and their work and have made a huge difference where they are, and they're not in a leadership position. So you don't have to even be in a leadership position. It's like, where are you and where has God placed you in this particular place with the gifts and the resources he has given you to do the work that he has called you to do?
Absolutely. I love that. As a matter of fact, I was just at a meeting yesterday with a group of Christian executives in Dallas, Fort Worth area, and we heard from one of the lawyers at Alliance Defending Freedom. And they were going over a couple of cases. Some were active and some were past, but they shared a story of even at Coca-Cola has started to bring in their own like speakers and do things. They're seeing like 200-300 people a month give their life to Christ and at Coca-Cola.
Yes, like, I've actually attended one of their tea factors. It's amazing.
It's crazy. And I was like, okay, awesome. And so it was just a, and so there are like, if anybody's curious about the legal, you know, ways to navigate through that, Alliance Defending Freedom has some great resources.
Yes, they do.
And I'm going to try to get them to come on. They've agreed to come on the podcast and talk through some of those things. But just a wealth of knowledge, because I know that you can get scared about taking these sort of initiatives and you don't know where to start. And if you don't know where to start and you're a little fearful, then you'll just never get going. But if someone listened to this and they say, you know what, I've been feeling this, I've been wanting to do this, or it just piqued my interest. If somebody wanted to take a baby step in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money to start loving their people well, what would you recommend that they do?
Ooh, it's going to sound really simple. I think that we have to make the time to talk to God about that, to talk to Jesus about what that looks like for us. You know, I actually, when I was presenting at ETBU on Monday, I said, you know, I'm going to present something to you and I'm going to lay out my points for you. But really what I want you to do when you leave here today, after ask all these questions about what it looks like to live out your faith and your work, is to go and talk to Jesus about what this means for your life, right? Mm. So I can tell you what it means for me and I can tell you how I've done it, but that may not be the plan for somebody else. And so I think it's so important when you hear something like this, the first step that you can take is go and pray about it and see where the Lord is leading you, and then be courageous. You know, you were talking earlier about the Enneagram 8, and I was thinking about how courageous Jesus was, even in the face of adversity and opposition and even danger, to the point of losing his life and he was still courageous, right? And I feel like that's something that we as eights have, but we can all have that. We can all have courage because Jesus was courageous. He can give us that. And so to pray about it and talk to Jesus about it and be courageous to take that first step, what does that look like? Like I said, where you are with the gifts you have to be able to impact the kingdom.
That's really good. Yeah. I mean, whether you're going to the cross or you're flipping some tables, you know, Jesus has some courage and some fire. And if you need a little extra, find your friendly neighborhood eight. We have courage to spare. Sometimes
we can help
courage. Yeah, we can portion out a little bit and we're fine.
Yes.
Carrie Ann, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm sure we could have about 17 different ones. But if people want to know more about you and Jasper or Beyond Business, and maybe they have some follow-up questions, how can they connect with you and these different organizations?
Yeah. So JasperVenturesInc.com. That is our company website. If you want to learn about us, learn about what it looks like to work here. We have a great recruiting site. And then beyondbusiness.org is our new nonprofit formed just about a year ago, almost exactly. And you can go out there and learn about what the summit looks like, when it is, how to register, how to get a table and bring your whole team with you. And of course, my door is always open and I'll try to be present when anybody walks through it. So if they need to contact me, I would love to talk to anybody about faith and work. I'm passionate about it. I can't talk enough about it. And I just really appreciate you allowing me the opportunity to have a great conversation with you today about it.
Absolutely. This is fantastic. And we will also put your LinkedIn email, if you're cool with it, on there so people can reach out. We're also going to put a link to the 2026 summit, which is live. So if you are in East Texas or feel like coming to East Texas, the Piney Woods, we have some great hotels and sites, but you can get your ticket there and check that out. And then also Melissa, who's the executive director of Beyond Business, if you want to know more, get in touch with her. Her episode is a fantastic place to start. So thank you so much, Carrie Ann, for making the impact you're making and for having this conversation. I think it's really going to help some people. To the listener, thank you for spending part of your day with me and Carrie Ann. We know we're a lot. We've been told that probably most of our lives, but we hope that this gave you a lot of value and a lot of things to think about. If you got value from this conversation, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever. If you hated this conversation, you can tell me that too, and that's okay. And I won't tell Carrie Ann, but because she will send your eyebrows, but she'll find you. I just turned you into Liam Neeson from Taken. But those sort of comments, those interactions, one, they help me know more of what you want from this podcast. I enjoy these things, but I do this for all of the listeners and for all of you who are looking to take your next step in leadership. But also the interactions help this be found by other people who are on their leadership journey and are looking for content like this. And so it's a free and easy way for you to make a difference in somebody else's life. And won't that make you feel warm and fuzzy going to sleep tonight? And I think we all want that. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.